You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner to English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 217A by Rudolf Steiner, Addresses and Essays, translated by Catherine Krieger, entitled Youth and the Etheric Heart. This is Part 12, entitled The Life of the World Must Be Constructed Anew from the Ground Up. Address during the Anthroposophical Teachers Conference, given in Arnheim, July 20th, 1924. Dear friends, the questions and longings that bring you together as young people are essentially the same as those that have occupied the hearts of modern youth for two decades. Insight into humankind's evolution allows us to recognize that point in time as the end of Kali Yuga and the dawning of the Age of Light. Equating our own time with the dawning of the Age of Light easily gives rise to misunderstanding, since the increase in light is still barely noticeable. In fact, we might say that circumstances have become even darker and more confused since the turn of the century. As with the inertia of external physical objects, human beings also exhibit inertia, tending to remain in a state they have once assumed. Most people today are visibly out of place in the 20th century. One has the impression that they were alive at least 100 years ago. It is not that they have simply remained the same age. They seem to have become stuck in a time long before their own births. Nonetheless, when we consider the beings involved in the earth's destiny, we find that humankind has outgrown the age when our souls were more or less unconsciously guided by creative divine powers. In our time, some spiritual beings have retired from involvement in human life, while others whose impulses have more to do with human freedom have begun to intervene in our evolution. As a general rule, people today remain relatively unaware that entirely new spiritual powers have become involved in humankind's evolution. Since the turn of the century, however, young people have sensed, at least in subconscious depths, the shake-up that is taking place in humankind's evolution. Of course, people say it has always been like this, in any age. Young people have always resisted the contributions of their elders or of traditions. Very brainy people say crown princes are always the emperor's opponents. Youth always resists age. Indeed, this has always been the case to a certain extent, but what is happening among today's young people, in part totally unconsciously, has never existed before. We might say that the discrepancy and contrast between young people's inner experience and its outer expression have never been so great. We have seen all kinds of youth movements, including the Wandervögel and various independent youth groups with different names. We have seen many examples of young people attempting to extract themselves from what old people call culture, to flee to the safe haven of powers they cannot clearly define. But from the very beginning it was quite clear to me that the majority of modern youth have a strangely comprehensive understanding that a great earthquake-like transformation must now occur in the evolution of humankind as a whole. Sometimes we perceive such things in very shattering and haunting ways. As an example, I have often recounted an incident that happened to me in Norway. A very young man, a high school student, came to see me, and they wanted to turn him away, thinking that such a very young person would only pester me. In such cases, people's good intentions are not always the right ones. As karma would have it, I met him on my way out the door and asked him to come in. For some reason, despite his age, I felt the need to start a conversation with him. He explained that the students in his high school were longing for something the school did not provide. They wanted to start a newspaper just for themselves, just for high school students. Could I help? I promised to help in any way I could if the project got off the ground. Then I went on talking with this very young person, who was not even close to graduating from high school. became quite evident that he shared subconsciously in the so-called youth experience, which is something very few old people understand. I have often asked old people what they mean by, quote, youth experience, close quote, and they say only that young people have always resisted the status quo. I have also asked young people who claim to have had this youth experience, and their answers are equally uninformative. Nonetheless, I knew that many of these young people had a subconscious experience of youthfulness that they could not describe. Very little comes out when you ask them about it, but it is obviously present in their subconscious. It comes out, for example, when they marvel at a natural view. People have always marveled at such things, but not in the way modern young people do. Perhaps modern young people do it much less perfectly, but they do it with a clear feeling of their own helplessness, knowing that the most basic elemental forces are involved in even the simplest act of marveling at nature. When one encounters such examples, one gains a very deep sense of the inner significance of this entire youth movement. Recall, for example, the monumental appeal to the natural world that came about through Rousseau and his followers. That, too, was a youth movement, explosive in its manifestation, even stormier than today's. And what came of it? The great intellectual materialism of the 19th century, the very thing that makes today's young people feel so out of place in modern culture. The intellectual activity that people enjoy or become annoyed about in conventional ways has grown old. Young people feel much more than that, but I must place great value on the more insightful aspect. There is so much talk today of revolution and reform, but the desire to revolt has become so deathly old. It is no longer anything that someone born around the turn of the century might want to grow into, if that person is honest with himself or herself. Young people sense this. They feel that they have not had a chance to grow up alongside older people who modeled joy and enthusiasm for the natural world. They feel that their souls were left to their own devices as they grew up. And the result was a cry to, quote, let me out of here, get me away from here, it doesn't matter where, get me away from centuries of tradition, close quote. You can tell that I'm not being very specific when I talk about this issue, but a heartfelt lack of precision is exactly what we need now. Our accustomed materialistic intellectual clarity would only falsify the issue. When I observed the dawning of this youth experience, I could tell that it was different from the experience of the young people of the 1870s, who also behaved with youthful enthusiasm and saw their elders in shades of gray. But I also saw one of those young people express his enthusiasm by giving a great speech about someone who died in the uprisings of 1848. As I listened to this speech, I thought that he sounded just like a privy councillor. And in fact, that is what he became. I met others who never grew into any of the traditional professions, and I saw them sink into an early grave, because it was simply impossible for them to participate in humankind's current evolution. At that time, a youth movement existed subconsciously, almost as if people were ashamed of it. They did not admit what they were feeling, and chose to let it waste away rather than allowing it to rise to the surface of their existence. What they felt did not allow them to participate in the normal human developments of their time. Years passed, and then decades. Now the vessel is full to overflowing, and the old shame can no longer endure. Young people have been forced to ask themselves why they are suffering and what they long for. This is what we saw flow into various youth associations in the modern youth movement. A relatively short time ago, a number of these young people entered the anthroposophical movement. Remarkably, what lived in their hearts met there with some understanding. In the relatively short time that has elapsed since then, young people have grown into a great variety of activities within our movement, but what is most needed in the youth movement is the will to meet other people on the human level. Without this, we will not get beyond fruitless discussion. To understand other people on a human level, the contents of our conversations are really terribly unimportant. It is crucial, however, that we feel in our hearts what the other person is feeling. If we can do this, we will always be able to reach agreement. This is something we must understand with our hearts. In this connection, it is essential for individual leaders in the youth movement to develop more confidence in the anthroposophical movement's sincerity and reliability. Without this confidence, the youth section will go nowhere. Initially, I felt compelled to inaugurate the youth section because of young friends who clearly and sincerely feel in themselves the longing of young people in the context of our modern lifestyle. If these people really come together in the youth section of the Anthroposophical Society, we will make a reality of the youth wisdom I mentioned in the Mitteilungen news. This youth wisdom will not be pedantic at all. It will be worked out among individuals through cordial mutual understanding. Of course, we are feeling our way forward, attempting to understand out of love, as young people do today. We began by attempting to poll young people about how they imagine the youth movement. We solicited thoughts of any kind on this subject, or perhaps not thoughts, but more concrete feelings and intentions. We were ready for anything we might hear, but nothing came of this effort. I then decided to take a more pointed approach and sent out a survey to young people. I'm sure you have seen it, asking how they imagined the human world would look in 1935, if it incorporated their youthful desires. If you take this question seriously, it can serve as a starting point for a great deal of in-depth thinking and feeling. Where is our old world headed? We know that we are not living in the three elements of the body social proposed by the movement for the threefold social order. Today we live in the trinity of fixed phrases, conventions, and routines that have taken hold of all aspects of our life. Since childhood, today's young adults have learned how to behave toward other people, but these conventions no longer apply. Since the turn of the century, your souls have received an entirely new impulse. Decades before the end of Kali Yuga, I felt something emerging that could not be encompassed by any of our traditional vocations. I myself never entered a profession. If I had done so, there would be no anthroposophical movement today. The anthroposophical movement was created independent of all traditions. The slightest tradition bias would have made it impossible. Anyone who cannot understand the fundamental need for such a movement is an opponent of the anthroposophical movement. In this sense, the anthroposophical movement is pure youth. So why shouldn't young people find their way to it? If the anthroposophical movement is honest and young people need honesty, what else do we need? Only courage, real courage. We need the courage to say that the life of the world must be reestablished on totally new foundations. This courage is something we either learn very quickly or not at all. In fact, I have never seen anything but this inscribed in the subconscious of young adults. The world must be constructed anew from the ground up. What they really want is to reestablish the world on new foundations. There are all kinds of reasons to refute this statement, endless discussions, all sorts of cover-ups. They simply falsify this very sincere subconscious statement and the courage it requires. The anthroposophical movement can become an institute of higher learning where we study courage. Admittedly, it is difficult for the anthroposophical movement to serve as the school of courage today, because for many people, our movement is a sideline, not the first priority in their lives. This is evident in the form of our public conferences. Increasingly, we are invited to give courses at places in the countryside where people spend their summer vacations. Why not offer anthroposophy instead of the usual concerts? As such, there is nothing wrong with this arrangement, but it is a symptom of the absence of the pervasive courage required to come to grips with concrete issues, to really unite with the spirit of anthroposophy rather than its shadow. It is a matter of feeling. My intent is not to criticize, but simply to point out symptoms. The youth movement must be able to find a connection to the impulses of the age of Michael, which I described yesterday as the great goal of our century. To do so, however, young people must learn to descend deeper into themselves and to avoid dreamy abstractions of all sorts. At that point, great problems appear. Materialistic intellectuals do not understand when we say that Michael has lost cosmic intelligence and remains above. Now that Michael appears without the cosmic intelligence he formerly held in trust, it is up to human beings on the earth to win it back for him and with him. Today such statements are frequently taken as abstractions in poetic disguise, which they are not. Young people who understand themselves will also understand these statements. It is essential to realize that spirit is real and that we must learn to communicate with it. It is also important to understand that spirit behaves differently now than it did not long ago. A century ago, sunrise was a misty semblance of the spiritual world, and people understood that spirit was alive behind it. Formerly a faint shimmer, the semblance became flaming as the 19th century progressed. Flames emerged from the semblance, and it is simply not accurate today if we follow Herder's or Goethe's example in describing a sunrise. Sunrise has changed from glimmering to flaming, and from the flames emerges spirit that challenges us to act. The spiritual world's gesture toward the physical world has changed. If people understand these laws of the spiritual world, we can prevent the youth movement of the 20th century from becoming as materialistic and intellectual as the post-Rousseau period became. If young people with their youthful enthusiasm can understand the reality of the spiritual world, the age of Michael will indeed dawn. If they cannot, the 20th century's materialism will be infinitely greater than what transpired after Rousseau. The 19th century, far exceeding earlier centuries that had not experienced Rousseauism, developed an exceptionally upstanding bourgeoisie. We talk a lot here about the principles of Waldorf education and a new science of education, but the most important point is to continue growing. Each day we face the danger that things will go sour on us. When we want to do something, to prepare for something new, it is important not to fall asleep by clinging to old habits. We must make a habit of creating a clear divide between sleeping and waking. We must be able to both sleep properly and wake up properly. At present, we are constantly sleeping when we should be awake. Our constitution does not allow us to realize that unless we repeatedly wake up anew, all of our reform movements and revolutions will do us no good at all. It is much worse when material intellectualism takes hold of our best efforts. Wherever the light is strong, shadows are dark. What is needed is not thinking about what should happen. People need to feel that the spirit outside of us speaks to us from the flames of nature. The sunrise has changed. But also our heart has changed. We no longer bear the same heart in our chest. Our physical heart has grown harder, and our etheric heart more mobile. We must find access to our super-sensible hearts. This is the way we must understand spiritual science. Spiritual science, as dry as it may sound, has become something everyone is talking about. Science is really suspect. We have to realize that spiritual science must live in our hearts. In this respect, young people have hearts ideally suited to feeling when something is right. It simply requires courage to really think it. In his enthusiasm, Schiller had a lot to say to the world. He died under strained circumstances. His autopsy showed that his heart looked like an empty sack, totally desiccated and burned out. All hearts that grasped their own renewal were burned like Schiller's. If we take spirituality seriously, we must have the courage to admit that if we cannot participate in the world as it is, it must be because we have new hearts. This is not just an empty phrase. We must become conscious of having new hearts that feel and experience the world very differently from old hearts. If we take this fact seriously, the youth movement will become a flame rising up in response to the flaming sunrise. This will happen, but not because of any discussions about being young or talk about experiences. Believe me, I have had strange experiences in this regard. In Breslau, I was welcomed into the ranks of the old when they called me the father. But in the youth gatherings, I was called the youngest of the young, even though I was 3 times the age of most of those present. The point is to be able to admit this age to oneself. Flames arising from within must join forces with flames coming from outside. It is not a question of learning or defining anything. The point is to develop a new type of enthusiasm. Nietzsche once said of Michelet, whom many people thought capable of enthusiasm, that his was the sort of enthusiasm that waited until he took off his coat. Michelet always had time to take off his coat before waxing warmly enthusiastic. It is as if he always had to take off his coat and put on his silk vest to be properly enthusiastic. Real enthusiasm, however, has no time to take off its coat. It does not notice that it is sweating in a hot coat. That is the enthusiasm we need, my friends. Enthusiasm that overwhelms us so that we forget we have our coats on. Enthusiasm that develops out of our direct experience of life. We really need to overcome everything that is old and tired. We are not at leisure to wait for clarity. We do not have time to gain clarity in the old way. We must really become enthusiastic, inspired, inspirited. Enthusiasm will accomplish everything. Then the old saying that, quote, enthusiasm bears spirit within it, close quote, will become really meaningful. This is only natural. We need enthusiasm. Enthusiasm supports the God within. God is inherent in the word itself. So that the Michael impulses can become reality, let us become one with the flame that is enkindled today. These impulses cannot become reality without flames. But to live and work out of the flames of enthusiasm, we ourselves must become the flame. Flame is the only thing that is not consumed by flame. When we feel ourselves becoming flames that cannot be burned by flames, we can afford to leave our physical hearts behind like empty sacks, because we will possess etheric hearts, hearts that understand that humankind is entering a new age and a life of spirituality. The complete youth experience means becoming one with spirituality. The end of part 12.